It's time for the Your Personal Bank Show with Farron Stoth. In an era of chaos, confusion, and craziness, Farron is a voice for common sense. As a financial literacy educator, speaker, and entrepreneur, Farron cuts through the noise to help us understand how current events affect our money, economy, and our freedom. Now, here's Farron Stoth.
Welcome to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Farron. If you want to contact me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So I saw this article, and I thought it was really excellent in discussing inflation and coming to real terms and understanding the true impact it's having on people. The title of the article is, "I'm an Economist, and here's why I don't think Americans' finances will ever truly recover from inflation." And he gives us a number of reasons behind it. So like he said, you know, we can't turn anywhere without hearing the impact of inflation, because we're dealing with the highest inflation we've seen in a generation. Some of the biggest damages, as he said, goes mostly to the lower income folks through higher food prices and housing prices. A quote here, he says, "Salaries have outpaced inflation. These gains do not apply to those on minimum wage, fixed income, or government benefits." So those types of folks get harmed the most by inflation, because the biggest percentage of their income, of course, goes to the basics, food and housing. But he goes on, as he states, is although inflation, the worst of the increases seem to be behind us, it hit over 9% one point a couple of years ago. He goes, even though once we do get past the inflation, even if prices do drop a bit, they won't go back to their pre-inflation levels. And you see this, you've seen this in history throughout different cycles. It's a lot like a rubber band. You know, if you take a new rubber band and you stretch it, it's kind of hard and firm. It's hard to stretch. But if you stretch that rubber band out enough and you keep stretching it for a while, then you let it go, it doesn't go back to its original size. Inflation and prices of goods and services kind of go about, operate the same way, because consumers get used to the higher prices. It becomes the new normal. And like this economist states, you might see some retraction, some regression of the prices after inflation is over, but they rarely go back to where they were pre-inflation levels. And as he pointed out, these inflation that we're be dealing with is extraordinary, because if you take the home prices, for example, since 2019 have gone up average 54%. That's just a stupendous increase. The increases of food, according to the USDA, food prices went up almost 10% in 2022 alone, which is the fastest increase since 1979. According to the Federal Reserve, grocery prices have gone up 25% since the pandemic started. And as he stated in this article, why a full recovery won't be possible in the near future is because of this. Prices have shot up so tremendously, so quickly, on so many things, everyday expenses, a full recovery will be nearly as impossible. As inflation does slow down, it doesn't look like any of these major expenses will see much of a price drop. And again, our rubber band analogy, it rarely goes back. Again, the rubber band got stretched out. It rarely goes back to its original size after it's been stretched. The same applies for prices, because consumers get used to, people get used to the new normal. They get used to paying the higher prices. So these higher prices for food and housing are most likely here to stay for the long term. Now, inflation has impacted people differently. Like he said, it's limited damage to wealthy Americans who might have to pay capital gains on inflation-linked assets, but capital gains rates, if they're held for a year or longer, far lower than income tax rates for most people. He wraps up this article with probably one of the statements I found most interesting, as he said, the most noticeable effects will be a decline in the savings rate and reduction in savings investment for long-term planning, such as retirement, home ownership, and et cetera. Because again, because of the higher prices of goods and services, many, many Americans have had to dip into their savings just to pay for basic expenses. Credit card debt, for example, has hit all-time records, which demonstrates that people are taking on credit, taking on debt just to cover basic expenses because of the higher inflation. That's going to have long-term negative financial impact for people. In other words, you don't take on debt if you have savings, especially high interest credit card type debt. You're not borrowing those kinds of rates if you have savings you can access and tap to cover your basic expenses. It just doesn't work that way. And as he wraps up this article, he kind of finishes up with this where he says, as frustrating as it is to see prices going up, we have to accept this is likely the new standard to adapt to. And to counter inflation, you need to increase your income, invest wisely, and stay proactive. Losses can hurt you more than ever. There's higher risk involved when you have an inflationary environment. You want to diversify your personal bank. Annuities can do that. This is the best time in 40 years for interest-sensitive assets like dividend-paying policies and annuities, for example. We have an annuity right now that's paying 8% guaranteed the first year and has strong fixed options and index options, S&P 500, Bloomberg, PIMCO, various things that have seen solid returns with no downside risk. Your personal bank dividends are 6% insured with guarantees, tax-free, and likely be increasing for the next 5 to 10 years. If there's ever a time to look at diversifying, as he stated in this article, be wise about investing and not just put it all at risk. Having a portion of your portfolio insured and guaranteed just makes more sense than ever. We'll discuss more of that on the show today as we go forward, but a few other quick thoughts to help paint the picture of what people are feeling and why they're feeling that way. But this is change in household net worth since the Biden and Trump administration. So it looks at both of them, in essence, about 3.5 years in. Trump's change in household net worth for his term was an increase on average of 40%. Now, that's a tremendous increase. At the 3.5 year mark, Trump's increase of net household net worth was at 25%, or Biden's is about 20%. And this is what the mainstream media is trying to paint, and the administration is trying to say, oh, it's not that bad. Biden's numbers aren't that far behind Trump's. But here's where the real story is told, the rest of the story, if you will. If you adjust change in household net worth for inflation, the Trump term, how average household net worth increased almost 30% over his term. 3.5 years into the Biden term, the increase in household net worth adjusted for inflation is zero. An almost 30% increase versus an increase of zero is a significant difference over the 3.5 to 4 year period. This is the reason why people are feeling poorer, because they are. And isn't so much how many total dollars they have, it's what the dollars are worth and how far they go in the purchasing power. Inflation destroys purchasing power. You need more dollars to buy things because everything costs more. But here's another reason why the average American in the last 3.5 years has felt poorer. So in August of 2021, which was roughly about the end of all the COVID pandemic measures, there was $2.3 trillion of accumulated savings in the United States. A lot of this had to do with the helicoptering of money into the system the federal government did with the various pandemic-related stimulus. Again, it was over $2 trillion of savings was accumulated by Americans by August of 2021. Just recently, the amount of savings that the average, or that total excess savings, as they call it, has now moved into the negative territory. So there's an average amount of savings that Americans have saved long term, and it's about 4% of their income, annual income. Excess savings is any amount above that. So again, in August of 2021, thanks to the pandemic, COVID relief monies that was helicoptered into the system, the U.S. consumers had over $2 trillion of excess savings, or more savings than they normally had. That number is now fallen to below zero. In other words, we are now at a point the average American household has less in savings than it had before the COVID pandemic. Why is this so important? Consumer spending has been consistently the one bright spot in our economy for the last couple of years. This is extremely important because consumer spending is about two-thirds of GDP. U.S. consumers having extra savings, having extra money available, meant they were continuing to purchase and buy, which continued to keep the economy rolling and therefore prevented us from falling into a recession. I've stated this repeatedly on this show that the one thing you need to watch is U.S. savings, consumer spending, and if that shoe drops, if that pulls back, and we're starting to see that in the last few months, that will likely be the last shoe drop to go into the next recession. And if you think also that there's any help on the way, the Federal Reserve likely is not going to come to the rescue, because as the Fed has been stating repeatedly, higher for longer. And Fed Chair Jerome Powell said recently that the Fed needs to see inflation fall more before cutting interest rates. Because even though inflation is still lower than it was at the highs, it's in the 3-3.5 range, according to the government numbers, it's still not at the 2% target rate that the Fed has. So it's far, nearly double the Fed target rate. And I've stated on the show now for well over a year, for those that keep thinking that we're going to see lower interest rates or interest rate cut soon, it's highly unlikely, not until inflation gets to that 2% level or below and then actually stays there for a little while before the Fed will likely entertain seriously Fed cuts. If you think Fed rates are coming soon, I'm sorry, but you're going to be very disillusioned. They're not coming. They're not the cavalry coming to the rescue anytime in the near future. Interest rates will be higher for longer. Everything's pointing to that. The bond market, the Federal Reserve, cause more struggles for the stock market. We're going to discuss these things more today, so I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned for that. But the things that will thrive are interest rate sensitive assets. You see it in the bank. When you walk into the bank, CD rates, savings rates are much higher than they were a couple of years ago. I stated this before. This is the best time in over 40 years for annuities, for high dividend paying insurance policies. And these are likely to continue to be strong, and not only that, but increase in the next 3 to 5 years, if not longer. If you want more information, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned in the next segment, because I'm going to go into more depth and answer a question that I've been getting from last week's show about how to sell some assets without having to pay capital gains taxes. And you can do it perfectly legally. It's in the tax code, but it's only available this and next year. So you want to take advantage of it while it still exists.
Stay tuned for more Common Sense from Ferentz. For more information, contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ferentz Toth. Want more information? Contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ferentz Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ferentz. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. I saw this article. I'm going to get into the tax situation, how to sell assets subject to capital gains without having to pay capital gains this and next year. It's in the tax code. I'll share that in a couple minutes. Before I get there, though, I want to finish the thoughts on inflation and the economy. One that I thought was very sad, and there was this article about Gen Zers are so disillusioned with the economy that many think it's okay to commit fraud. They've been hit with a tsunami of economic issues they're struggling with: increased housing costs, student loan debt, rising prices on everything. Most Gen Zers don't have a whole lot in savings yet. They haven't had time to do that, don't have a lot of investments. So they haven't been able to take it. Most of them don't own real estate, so they haven't had the opportunity to take advantage of some of these historic gains in the stock and real estate markets. And this is why nearly half are now stating that they're willing to commit first-party fraud to dispute a purchase, for example, despite the purchase being legitimate. Desperate people do desperate things. And this is disappointing because as times get tougher, again, inflation is a cumulative effect. It's not so much what happens 1 year, 1 month, or 1 year. It's the cumulative effect of multiple years. Like the Federal Reserve said, food prices increasing 25% over the last 3 years. It's the cumulative effect of that. Housing increasing by 50% in the last 4 or 5 years. It's a cumulative effect of those tremendous increases that hurts people the most. And Gen Zers are getting hit by it some of the worst and are getting extremely disillusioned. And that's not a good thing for our society. The last thought I want to share on this is if we look at the bond market, which has been one of the best predictors of recessions going back well over 100 years, the numbers from the bond market and everything that's going on there really points to a U.S. recession is delayed but not derailed. In other words, it's been delayed, as I stated earlier, by the excess savings that consumers had thanks to all the pandemic relief spending, but that excess savings has now been depleted. In fact, the amount of savings the U.S. consumer has now is actually now below levels before the pandemic. Credit card debt has hit all-time highs. These are all things that are a good indicator of upcoming recession. I just want you to be aware of it. I don't like being the bearer of bad news consistently, but when there is nothing, almost nothing but bad news, it's hard to ignore the message, and I want to share the facts so you can make better financial decisions. Now let's get on this tax thing. First of all, one of the things we've been hearing politically is, pay your fair share. We've been hearing that from the current administration for several years. Well, I have an article here from the Wall Street Journal that states the U.S. already soaks the rich, and these are all numbers from the IRS. I'm going to post this on our website at yourpersonalbank.com so you can check it out or pass it on to anybody you'd like. But it's very eye-opening. And the point it makes out is the top 1% of income earners in 2021 paid over 45% of all income taxes, which, by the way, that's up from 33% from 2001. So in the last 20 years, the top 1%, the amount of total taxes they've paid, their share, has increased significantly. And if you look at the charts here, again, from the IRS, the top 10% of income earners pay nearly 75 to 80% of all income taxes. The top income earners are paying by far the most of the taxes. And if you dig into the numbers even further, if you start with the bottom half of income earners, for example, the bottom half average income tax rate was just over 3%. So they only paid 3% of their total income in taxes. You contrast that with the top 1%, and they're paying over 25% of their income in taxes. And if you took the very, very top, the top 0.1%, these are people making over $3 million a year, and their average tax rate was 25%. In fact, if you look at each level of income, as the income level increases, the percentage of their income paid in taxes increased along with it. So when you hear these, and then frankly, they're just lies when they say, billionaires are only paying 8% or what we've heard. I've heard that number put out there a lot of times of their income and taxes. It's an absolute total lie. The actual number is over 25%. And the bottom half of income earners only pay about 3% of their income. It's a graduated tax scale. I'm going to again post this. These are the facts. Forget the politics. By the way, where that 8% number is, or pay your fair share, is what they're talking about is not paying tax on unearned income or assets that are currently not subject to tax. For example, if you own a property and your property, say, went up in value, that increase in value, are you taxed on that? The answer is no, or at least not until you actually sell that asset. Same thing for the stock or most other assets. That's called capital gains. It increases in value, but you only pay tax on it when you actually sell it. Politically, the Biden administration, they're discussing that billionaires are only paying 8% of their total income or assets. They actually say assets, if I remember right, because they're counting those assets that increased in value, but they still own. They didn't sell it. They didn't sell the house. They didn't sell the stock. It just happened to increase in value. And of course, our federal government wants, or our current administration, I should say, wants to tax that. Now, do you understand how devastating that could be if that actually went into effect? How would you like a situation where your house went up in value, for example, and it went up in value $100,000 to keep a nice round number? And if you're in the 20% tax bracket, you would owe $20,000 in taxes. You didn't sell the house. You're still living in it. That's what they're talking about. That would have a devastating, destructive, horrendously destructive effect on our economy if they were ever able to tax assets that increased in value but had not been sold. Which brings me to the other situation that I brought up last week in terms of capital gains. They got a lot of attention. So I need to bring this up again because this is something that could help a lot of folks that are listening right now. And it's sad, I'm going to say this much, if people are not aware of it, your tax person or financial person is not giving you some good tax planning advice if you don't know this. Here's the situation. The current tax rules allow for someone to sell assets that are subject to capital gains. That's typically real estate and stocks, things like that, most commonly, if their income is below a certain level. If you're married, that level happens to be about $123,000, your total income. If you're married filing jointly and your income is about $123,000 gross or less, you can sell assets that are subject to capital gains without any capital gain tax. Now, if you've owned a property or some stock for over a year, it would be subject to long-term capital gains. Again, as long as your income is below that $123,000 joint married. If you're single, that number is about $61,500 per year. So I was just talking to somebody just recently they were single, their income was $30,000 a year, but they had significant stocks they had owned for decades, and they have the ability to sell some of those stocks without paying capital gains. If you want to learn more about this, if your income levels are below that, you should contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. I can show you the tax planning numbers. These are for 2024, and show you how much you could actually sell if you wanted to and not have to pay capital gains. A lot of people are interested in this because, well, the stock market and real estate markets are at or near all-time highs. There's a lot of uncertainty going on right now as we speak. As this article I stated earlier, the recession is delayed but not derailed, and that's what a lot of economists believe. If you want to peel off some of those profits, put them into something guaranteed, insured, safe, even tax-free, I can show you how to do that. And some of that actually can be without capital gains. Again, if you're under those income limits of around $123,000 income as a couple, or about $61,500 income as a single. Now, why is this so important right now? Well, these current tax laws are in place for 2024 and 2025. They are then set to expire after that. If Congress does nothing and no change is made, then the benefits that you would have had to take advantage of this, to sell some assets subject to capital gain without any tax, will then go away. If this tax rule expires in 26, you will not have that opportunity. Now, if this is of concern of yours, the Biden administration has made it very clear that if they are reelected, they're going to allow these tax rules to expire, which means taxes will go up on nearly everyone. That's just a statistical fact. It's not politics, it's math. So think about that when you go to who do you support. Stay tuned in the next segment. We're going to cover some more things about what's happened, some good news. I'm going to discuss Chevron deference and why this is so important. So I'm going to encourage you, this new ruling with the Supreme Court, I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Common Sense from Ferentz. For more information, contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to contact me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com, and yes, you will reach me. So this recent Supreme Court ruling, it's one of the biggest ones in decades, in my opinion, and it's Chevron deference. And why is this so important? Well, first of all, what is Chevron deference, if you're not aware of it? There was a case back in 1984 involved the oil giant Chevron. It gave federal agencies wide powers to interpret laws and decide the best ways to apply them. Well, the reality of what happened is this was the beginning of federal agencies gaining power, gaining bureaucracies building and growing, because when the law was passed and maybe there was a ambiguous part of how it should be enforced, the Supreme Court in 1984 said that the courts were to defer to the experts, quote unquote, or the government agencies. And what the government agencies were really good at is gaining power for themselves. It is now gone. And that is great, because what that means is it takes away a big part of the power of the federal bureaucracies. In other words, they're not free to interpret the laws anymore. That is a job of the lawmakers or Congress. What's going to have to happen now is, instead of Congress passing this big omnibus packages or these vague rules and ideas and then allowing the federal bureaucracies to interpret and enforce and apply these rules, Congress is going to have to come up, make actual rules and laws that will be more detailed, structured, and clear, which takes away the power from the bureaucracy, or the fourth branch of government is what it's become. That's why this is so, so important, so valuable. One of the things a lot of people look back kind of fondly now at the Trump economy, because discuss how we lower taxes. We discussed that in the last segment, by the way. But there was an even bigger thing that the Trump administration did that a lot of people don't realize, yet most business people do. And that is the Trump administration removed more regulations than any administration in probably our lifetimes. I'm not saying there doesn't need to be any rules, but the reduction of regulations, too much excess regulation creates inefficiencies, costs time, costs money, and it becomes, in some cases, impossible for companies to do business. Elon Musk recently put out a message that I thought was very appropriate to this, and it was, the federal government's job is to be the referee and to make sure the game, the rules are set and applied fairly so that the players that play the game can play it equally and you have a fair and a good game. And we see that in sports all the time. But when the number of referees outnumber the players, and there become too many rules, the game is not good anymore. You can't have too many referees. You can't have too many rules. You can't make it too complicated or too difficult, because nobody will want to play the game anymore, and that the economy suffers. And I use an analogy I've shared with this many times in the past of an annuity product I started selling 25 years ago. This product is still available today. Same product, same company. There is nothing that has changed. It stood the test of time, in other words. My point is this. When I started to do an application for this product, it was literally a one-page application front and back. You filled out the front and the back, and that was it. It was done. The same application for the same product today, if it's not an IRA, it's 55 pages. If it's an IRA, it's 70 pages. Same product, same company, same everything. How much longer does it take an agent to fill out a 50 or 70 page application versus a two-page application? Apply that same extra time, regulation, and cost times millions of people across thousands of industries and businesses. And you can quickly see where overregulation slows down the wheels of capitalism, slows down economic growth, it slows down wealth creation, and it impacts everyone. The fact that the Trump administration deregulated or got rid of or removed more regulations than any other, in many economists' and business owners' opinions, had a bigger impact than even the tax cuts. So the fact this Chevron deference, where the bureaucracies are not going to be in charge of how to interpret or apply the laws, Congress will be. That means we have a say. They're going to be on the hook. These people are actually going to have to start doing their job. And if we don't like the job they're doing, we can remove them, replace them, vote them out. This is great news for freedom-loving Americans and anyone that wants to succeed in this country. Now, let me shift gears a minute here. I want to talk about a couple other things. I've discussed a lot about the stock and real estate markets. There's a couple of key points that I think you shouldn't be aware of. I get asked these questions all the time. Currently, there's a Fortune article that discusses the divergence in the stock market is now the biggest it's ever been, which signals more vulnerability ahead. These are according to economists. We've seen an epic rally in the stock market in 2024. There is no question about that. But the problem is that the top 10 companies in the S&P 500 account for 35% of the market's value, but only 23% of its earnings. This is a divergence, as he stated, that's never been bigger. And as he states, the problem for the S&P 500 today is not the high concentration of stocks, we've discussed this before, but also the record high bullishness on future earnings from a very small group of companies. The gains have been concentrated into just literally a handful of stocks, which has obscured the relatively mediocre results of the rest of the index. And NVIDIA by itself has accounted for more of than a third of the S&P 500's rally this year. If NVIDIA or a couple of those other companies start to stumble, or people start to turn, or they want to start cashing in their gains, this could have a tremendous negative effect on the market overall. That's the point that this article is trying to state in Fortune. The bottom line is there's significantly increased volatility and risk because the gains predominantly are narrowed into literally a handful of companies. And any stumbling by any one or more of those companies could have a tremendous negative impact on the overall market. I've shared this statement with people all the time. If I said to you, you should invest all your money in one stock, what would your response be? If anyone said that to you, I really should say, what would your response be? The answer would be you're crazy. And the obvious reason why you would say that is it's too risky. You've got everything tied up in one stock. You want to spread out the risk, diversify. Well, folks, the gains in the S&P 500 for 2024 have not been spread out. In fact, they've been literally concentrated in a handful of companies. The rest of the index is not doing so well. So unless you had happened to invest in those companies, significant amount, you've probably not seen a whole lot in the way of gains. Also, if you're investing in the S&P 500, the reality is your gains have not been diversified very much. It's, again, been in only a handful of companies. Diversification is not diversifying into different sectors in the market. That's not true diversification. True diversification is diversifying, investing in non-correlated assets. In other words, things that have nothing to do with each other. You know, stock market versus real estate market versus fixed assets. These are all things that are guaranteed, insured, tax-free even. Diversify your tax risk. That's why your personal bank is so popular, why annuities have become so popular again, as a way to diversify your risk. And again, it's the best time in 40 years we've seen for fixed assets. So increased interest in those. But to go beyond that, if we want to discuss the real estate market, because again, I get asked this all the time, what should I be looking at? What should I do? Where are the areas of concern? Because so few people hear much of this from Wall Street or the mainstream media. Let's face it, or the legacy media, as I like to call it. Well, U.S. home valuations have now officially reached levels previously seen in 06, 07, just before the housing crash. Current estimates are home prices are overvalued by over 20% on a rent basis and 26% on a homeowner basis. And both valuations have risen at least four times in just the last 4 years. The annual income to buy a median value house exceeds the median household income by over $40,000, which is also a new record. The U.S. housing market is extremely, extremely unaffordable. In fact, the most unaffordable it's ever been on record. And now we're looking at a situation even worth millions of homeowners are going to have to get slammed with higher monthly payments. Why? Adjustable rate mortgages have never completely disappeared. In fact, it turns out 1.7 million homeowners have bought homes with adjustable rate mortgages since 2019. Most of those were in 5 and 7 year rates, adjustable rates. So the first wave of adjustable rate mortgage folks are now going to have a much higher interest rate than they started with. Some of these people are not going to be able to afford to maintain their home, and this will increase. There'll be a cascading effect on this as we go forward. One of the reasons why housing affordability has been so high is the lack of homes available to sell. Well, these folks that were that did the adjustable rate mortgages, some of them are going to be forced out, which will then give increased availability of homes again, and that's what is predicted to be seen in the near future. Which leads me to the U.S. housing market. I love this article in Business Insider. The U.S. housing market is an entered bizarro world. As it states, it's distorting the core principle of supply and demand, core principle of economics. Home prices soared again in May, even as existing home price sales fell and the supply of homes jumped. So there's increasing amount of homes becoming available, yet the prices are still going up. And as one economist stated, this one's a real head scratcher. In other words, the prices of homes is defying gravity. You can defy gravity for a little while, but eventually everything comes back down. This is my third rodeo, folks. I've shared this many times on this show. This is my 25th year in the financial business. And I've seen this before. When you see things happening that make no economic sense, make no logical sense, that's typically when that's a really big red flag that the end is near, an adjustment is coming. Be careful. When people get euphoric and they start saying things like, oh, the market will never go down again and all these kinds of things, and I'm starting to see some of those things, you start seeing some of these crazy recommendations. I'm seeing some people say this about the markets, real estate and stock markets. That's when you want to be most cautious, most concerned, most wary. Just trying to be a voice of reason and common sense here. Protect yourself. Reduce your exposure. Reduce your risk. Diversify. Have at least some of your portfolio insured with guarantees. Tax-free if you can. Highly liquid. That's what your personal bank does. Annuities can also accomplish a lot of that for you too. My point is simple, is you can protect some of these gains that you've made in these tremendous real estate and stock markets that we've seen in the last decade, yet are frankly starting to really falter, showing huge signs of cracking. And gravity, folks, always wins eventually. It may take longer than you think, but it will win. It's just a matter of time. Stay tuned in the last segment. I got a few other loose ends and some things I think you'll find very interesting. So don't miss it.
Stay tuned for more Common Sense from Ferentz. For more information, contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ferentz Toth. Want more information? Contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ferentz Toth.
Welcome back to Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ferentz. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. And yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. I love this article. I've It states, the very overdue collapse of short-term rentals has started. I get asked by a lot of people, should I look into Airbnbs, investing in real estate, renting it out and stuff? Folks, a heyday of that is over. A lot of people did it. They bought up a lot of properties. That's also part of the reason why in certain places, particularly places that are more tourist-friendly, why the prices of real estate have gone up is because so many people bought for short-term rentals. And the investors were able to make a higher return on short-term rentals than longer-term. So they went that route. But like anything that gets too good, too many people get involved and you get market saturation. We're already starting to see numbers in many places where longer-term rentals now have a higher return than the short-term. It's a narrowing gap of profits. And as that continues to go that direction, you're going to see less short-term in rentals and you're going to start seeing more longer-term rentals come about. Also, there's been a regulatory backlash. Places like New York City and like Barcelona, Spain, and some other cities have really pushed back on restrictions or even outright banning short-term rentals because the local residents are getting kind of fed up with it, frankly, because, again, it went too far. I'm not saying if you did short-term rentals, you're a bad person. It's just too much of a good thing makes it, you know, you eat too many candy bars, you know, it's going to catch up with you after a while. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're seeing. Also, the hotel industry really wasn't geared towards providing like apartment-style accommodations for families and stuff. And that's really a niche where Airbnb and other short-term rentals kind of filled in. Well, the hotel industry has really kind of stepped up on that and kind of fill in that backfill of that demand that's there. And then a lot of times, I've rented a number of Airbnbs and it was at first it was really good, and then after a while you started seeing prices go up and fees and cleaning fees, and you know it just got to be or was less and less efficient or effective. So you know the heyday of short term rentals, I believe in my opinion, is over. I'm not saying you can't make money at it; still shouldn't do it, but it's not. There's going to be an adjustment, and it's going to be a collapse, which will bring some people are just going to get out of the market and sell their properties altogether because they're done. Others will turn them into more longer-term rentals, that type of stuff. We'll see. And I love this article. You're starting to see stuff like from the BBC. What does a world without Airbnb look like? You know, they really are starting to ban or restrict many of these short-term rentals in so many of these cities where it's been super popular. Now, I love this one. I saw this, and I just had to throw this in. Why electric cars go to dealers for service 3 times more than gas-powered vehicles? I love that one. And this is from J.D. Power and Associates. It's true. They went through all the different types of cars and vehicles and which ones. And the reality is electric cars go in for service far more than gas-powered vehicles, primarily because they're a new technology. They're still working out a lot of the bugs, folks. Again, I'm not against EV technology and all that. What I'm against is mandates forcing it down our throats. When it becomes commercially viable, it will succeed in the marketplace, and if it's a better choice for people, they will take that choice. For some people, even right now, it's a better choice if they want a commuter car and they're in an area where there's chargers readily available. That I can see where it could make sense. But don't force it down the throats of everybody, because not everybody in this country lives that kind of lifestyle. In fact, most people don't. As the technology improves and increase, I can see where there'll be a higher, more people will adapt and adopt that technology. What I'm dead set against is force mandates, pushing it down our throats. And I'm also against taxpayer incentives. These are monies that we're spending for these industries to push this technology forward. I do not appreciate using our money to force feed something down our throats. I just don't think it's right. Our government didn't do that with gas stations. When the gas-powered vehicles first came about, there were no gas stations. Think about it. Just like when EV vehicles first came about, there were no EV charging stations. But as demand came about, gas stations popped up all over the country, didn't they? Capitalism, opportunities, when presented, will be filled by people. They'll see that opportunity and build it and fill. Give people the opportunity to do something. Don't mandate this stuff and just get in the way and push your weight around just because you happen to be the federal government. It takes away incentive and entrepreneurship and opportunities for people, and it wastes a lot of money. And it just frustrates a lot of people. And I just wish people, we need to understand that as voter, as citizens and voters. People that talk about, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and if it's not constitutionally one of the enumerated powers of the federal government, we should say, you have no business doing that. You have no business building EV charging stations. That's not in your mandate. That's not in your job description. So vote somebody else in that understands that and get rid of the person that is overstepping. Here's another one. I love this. Hottest summer on record. It's a U.S. map showing the hottest temperature on record for every state in the union. And what's interesting about this is the vast majority of the states, the highest temperature on record in their state history for most states was in the 1930s. In fact, the hottest temperature on record, there was only one state, Colorado, in the 2010s. And only two states, even in the 2000s. All of them were in the 1900s, and some go all the way back to the 1800s. Again, the vast majority of them occurred in the 1930s. We had a period of very hot weather, the Dust Bowl, around the Great Depression, 1934, 35, 36, where there was a ton of record temperatures recorded in the Midwest and in the eastern United States. So when they keep talking about the hottest summer on record and the hottest temperatures on record, the facts don't agree with that. I love this one too. A medical textbook from 1989 showing coronavirus is in fact a common cold. And this was printed by Random House. I thought that was very interesting. And another thing to think about is in the fall of 2021, Portugal was the most vaccinated country against COVID in the world. And this year, Portugal broke the record for the number of excess deaths among all European countries. Gee, I wonder why. Here's some solutions that I want to touch on that I think people will find interesting. Stop referring to members of the Senate and House as our leaders. We do not answer to them. They are merely our representatives, and they should be reminded of that fact often. We elect representatives to represent us, not lead us, but to actually represent us. If they're representing our interests as citizens, they deserve to be reelected. If they are not, they deserve to be not reelected, replaced by someone else who will do a better job of representing us. That should be the criteria for any elected representative of any position, no matter if they're city council, school board, state, federal, or even the president. I don't care who it is. We elect them to represent us. Yes, they have to make decisions. Make that decision based on how best to represent the interest of us, their constituents. Again, if they're not doing that, replace them. If they are, reelect them. That should be the criteria. Bottom line, period. Nothing else. My sign-off on the show is always, well, as long as it's on our money and God we trust. Well, this is something I did not even realize until recently, that it turns out that on the quarter, if you look at it, you have a picture of Washington. Above it, it says Liberty. And on the coin, the saying, in God we trust. Well, it turns out, prior to 1998, the Washington portrait faced in God we trust. In 1998, Bill Clinton administration, they turned the portrait around so that the face, it was facing away from the in God we trust. In other words, it was to his back. This has been reversed back and then back again. So now apparently, currently, the current quarter show Washington with his back in God we trust is behind his head. He's facing away from it. Now, to some people, this may seem like a minor thing. No big deal. Who cares? Whatever. Symbolism means something. Now, I don't know if this was intentional. I can't say that for sure. But I find it hard to believe that whoever was in charge of the Mint, whoever was in charge of handling this, this did not occur to them. And I think it does display certain level of symbolism that's appropriate. There's no question that our country has turned away from God. And if you think that the issues have been going on recently with our political situation, where we're facing a group of elected and bureaucratic people who fundamentally hate this country and fundamentally want to change it. We've never seen a situation in human history where a group of people who actually hate their country want to actually run it. And if you can't see the spiritual implications here that we're dealing with evil, you haven't been looking very hard. And I would recommend you open your eyes and your heart to the idea that we're dealing with a battle of good and evil here at its very core. So this may just be a coincidence that Washington is facing away from In God We Trust when he used to face towards it, but I kind of think not. And I think it's an appropriate symbol. And I believe that our country needs to turn back towards God, not just symbolically, like on the quarter, but in actuality. That truly would be the key to solving many of the problems that we have as a country and get it back in the direction of greatness. We've gotten away from that. We need to get back to what works. This country was founded on those ideals, on those principles. It's on our money. We need to get back to it actually meaning something. As always, stay tuned to the Your Personal Bank Show for more great information. No BS, common sense, things that affect you, get you thinking about what's really going on, help you understand what's really going on so you can make better decisions. If you want to contact me, I'll be happy to help you at yourpersonalbank.com. And again, as long as it's on our money, in God we trust.
Listen Tuesdays at noon and Saturdays at 1 to the Your Personal Bank Show for more information. Contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. This show is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information. The presenter and guests of this program do not engage in legal, accounting, or tax advice. Professional advice regarding your situation should be sought if required. Some products discussed may have limitations and not be available in all states. Excessive unpaid loans may affect performance. Distributions may become taxable if not managed properly. Replacements may not be suitable for everyone. There may be charges when replacing coverage. Dividend rates and bank line of credit rates may change. For current rates, contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. Again, that's 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.